Hi, this is Russ, a.k.a. Tiberius, and you're listening to the only Neverwinter Nights podcast.
Someone give me a tankard! This is going to get good!
It's the Neverwinter Nights podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast.
The only podcast for the Neverwinter Nights game series, bringing you news, interviews, reviews, and more for the community by the community. You can find us online at NeverwinterNightsPodcast.com. And now, on to the show.
Hello, I'm Trey, a.k.a. Ashercon Zelo.
Hi, I'm Michelle, a.k.a. Liso.
And welcome to the 53rd episode of the only Neverwinter Nights podcast. What you been up to, Michelle?
I am fixing to move.
Uh-oh.
I got a...
Moving?
We got a bigger place, more room to roam around, and a yard to mow.
Cool. You're not moving very far, are you?
No. Just a quieter neighborhood.
Hey, I've been getting to play quite a bit since I haven't been on the show in a while.
What have you played?
Well, I've made it to Act 2 of Mask of the Betrayer.
Ooh. Now tell me, are you digging it better than the OC or not?
Yeah, I think I am. Well, I do not like the spirit thing, though. I must confess.
It's a pain. It's a pain.
I feel like it's now rushing me a little bit.
Yeah, it's
and I'm actually,
a pain in the butt.
I've got it down pretty low at the moment, going into Act 2. So I've been trying to suck stuff spirit so that I can get it back up.
I will give you one little hint, and it's not a spoiler. The further you go into the game,
the easier it gets.
Yeah, the more opportunities you have to fill it completely up without having any evil acts or anything like that.
Yeah, but it's been fun. I've also been getting to play quite a bit over on the Realms of Anacolia. I'll usually get on and Dave will want to go prancing around in there and we'll go get him and our two characters together and we've had some pretty cool outings. I think it was Friday night, last Friday night. I was kind of bored, so Dave just happened to be on and said, hey, let's go in Anacolia. So we went in and, he took me to this. Actually, I found out that this place is supposed to be secret, so I might not. And it was kind of cool. Three DMs showed up and started laying out an event for us right there, you know, impromptu. It was pretty cool.
Oh, that's nifty.
And then we headed off to try to kill some trolls.
Hey,
on my zebra horse.
Don't get jealous, folks. Not everybody gets a zebra in Neverwinter Nights.
Yeah, I found out, I finally got a horse, and then it's like, looks like a zebra. So I was like, hey, what's up with this? And then I found out that because of the new video drivers, you know, that have come out with NVIDIA.
Right.
It causes some problems with some of the textures and things in Neverwinter Nights 1, I guess with the CEP.
Mm-hmm.
And so Barry Eversoll of the CEP, he graciously he let me have something before everybody else has got to have it. And I loaded that up, and I now have a black horse.
I thought it was cool that you had a zebra. Trey's video driver woes.
So, hey, a monk and a zebra were in a bar. The monk said to the zebra, what is with those stripes of yours? The horse looked at the monk as if he had gone mad. What stripes? Asked the horse. Sounds like you need a shot of rollback. Michelle made that joke up, by the way.
No, didn't. I don't know what you're talking about.
She did. We were on Instant Messenger one night, and I was telling her about that going on, and she typed this joke back. She goes, this sounds like you need to roll your video drivers back. And I go, I don't want to roll them back. And then you told this joke.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yes, she did.
Great. Everybody who listens are truly, truly going to know I'm lame.
Hang on.
So what else we got going on this week? Subject diversion.
Let's see. What do we have? Oh, we got some more news from BGP Hughes over at, or Ben Wyanatt-Hoosey over at the Academy of Modding Excellence. He said that they expect to post the remaining NWN2 finalists for the module categories next week, which would be, let's see, I received this on Friday of last week, so that would be this week. This week when this episode comes out.
That's exciting, and I want to congratulate those who have been nominated also. There's some fantastic nominations on there.
Well, anybody would know? I think I remember seeing Ernie Noah on there.
Yes.
And Zach. I saw Zach on there.
Mm-hmm.
Zach Holbrook. But anyway, he also had some other news. He also said that this Saturday, May 3rd, at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, they're going to hold an IRC chat. And the idea is to get some of the nominees in channel and ask them some questions. So I hope you see. So he actually asked us if we could join him on that. But we also have another a round table scheduled for that Saturday.
Do they have the IRC server channel and all that stuff?
No, he didn't. He didn't send that in the post. So.
Ah, okay.
I guess we'll have to get that. See if I can find that.
We'll scout around for that and put it in our show notes.
Yeah. So also speaking of May 3rd, Saturday, we're also going to have another live roundtable. This time it's going to be with the Dungeon Masters from the Realms of Anacolia. They're going to do a live roundtable discussion called So You Want to Run a Persistent World. And I think Dungeon Masters Barry, 1066, Carissa, 1066, Flame Crow, Macau, Roannon, DM Feather, and I think Athena Meter was going to join, but then I think I got a note earlier today that said she's not going to be able to make it, so that'll be interesting.
It's fun. Do you read names?
I'm just going to show up and record for them, and they're just going to go after it, kind of like you did with the modders.
Right. I think you asked me to come Saturday also.
Yes.
Unless you want me to go cover the chat.
I don't know. We might have to talk about that.
Okay.
Yeah. I told Ben we'd try to send someone over there to it.
Adam Miller has a neat little project going on within Dark Waters 3. It's called Loot Hero, which I believe is kind of takes after that whole Rockstar Hero. I'm really not sure what it's called. I know it's like on the Nintendo Wii or something. But within his game, it's called Loot Hero, and we do have a link for it, his YouTube video for it, and it looks really nifty. It looks like it's going to be a really fun little side thing. I did see in the video that you actually learn all these songs and with the loot and the music and everything, and you can kill things with it. That's so cool. So that should be pretty exciting. Go check out the YouTube video, and we will have that link on our show notes.
You can kill stuff with your loot?
With the music, yeah. With the music you learn and all this stuff, you get, like, spells flying through the air and killing stuff. It's just really neat.
Sounds dangerous.
It's like extreme bard.
And now for an extreme bard.
And tonight, for our interview, we have Tiberius. His real name is Russ. He is part of Ossian Studios. He has also released several modules in Neverwinter Nights 1, Celeron's Gambit 1 through 5, and he is currently on a project, the Maimed God series. He is also has a future project, possibly a real-world history module. It was a great interview. Sit back, relax, and enjoy. Tonight we have Russ, a.k.a. Tiberius. Russ has been modding since Neverwinter Nights 1 with the Hall of Fame hit Celeron's Gambit, Series 1 through 5. Russ has also made the transition to Neverwinter Nights 2. Along with his current solo project, the Maimed God Saga, He has joined Ossian Studios and contributes his talented writing skills. Hello, Russ. How are you this evening?
Hey, I'm doing just fine. Thank you.
Great. Would you like to tell the community a little bit about yourself?
Yeah. I am, as you said, Russ Davis. I'm 32-year-old electrical engineer living in Melbourne, Florida, which is right on the East Coast near the Cape. During the day, for the most part, I work on communication satellites. And at night, I, among other things, mod. I've been involved in Dungeons & Dragons since about the mid-80s. Got involved with the old Red Box sets, and then recently came back with Baldur's Gate 2 and got involved in the computer version of the game, and have since been fairly active, I guess, in Neverwinter Nights 1 and 2 as a modder.
Great. Could you tell us about your modding history?
Yeah, I got into Neverwinter Nights 1, and I got it December of 02. After running through the OC, I began messing around with the tool set. I probably had about 5 or 6 abortive attempts of just starting things and not having the dedication, I guess, to push through it before I finally released Salarin's Gambit Chapter 1 late in 04. And 5 parts later, that got me more or less to Neverwinter Nights 2, or a few months before Neverwinter Nights 2 came in. I did try one small module, Neverwinter Nights 2, essentially as a learning module after it first came out, but quit when Ossian asked me to join and kind of learned on their dime, as it were. And since completing work on Mysteries of Westgate, I have been heavily involved in my own project, the Maimed God Saga, for most of the last 6 months.
Which we will have a link to Tiberius's blog, and you can check out his project there. You obviously are a very talented writer with a knack for storytelling. Have you ever written anything other stories other than modules?
Nothing serious, and by serious I mean nothing outside of school projects. The Maimed God Saga did originally start as a novel attempt, believe it or not. I actually got to around chapter 3 or so, which doesn't mean anything unless you know the story. But I eventually decided that I didn't have the patience for novel writing, so I'll have the patience for modding and just do it that way. I've considered, when I actually release the module, to also release as one of the little goodies extras for whoever is interested, the 3 chapters of the first draft that I actually wrote, which would give the official canon version of the story, if you will, though people will have a lot more options actually playing through it.
Salarin's Gambit, which, by the way, I would like to convey to the community that this was a phenomenal series. Very rich in storytelling, rich NPCs, companions, music was amazing, atmosphere was amazing. So if you're still willing to go tug up that Neverwinter Nights 1, go for it and play it if you haven't yet. And I'd like to ask you where this story came from and how it came together and all that wonderful stuff.
All right, that's about a half-hour answer right there. But
go for it.
I'll try and make the quick version here.
Okay.
I talked earlier about having a few start and goes when I got into Neverwinter Nights 1 modding. And believe it or not, Salarin's Gambit was the first module I tried to make, though it was in that incarnation, very, very different from what eventually made it out. Actually, in that story, Salarin would have been a much darker character and would have been trying to use the PC at the end. The final fight would have been against him, believe it or not. And as he tried to manipulate the PC and taking possession of the sword himself. When I came back after getting involved in a number of other stories, I finally came back to this original idea and decided that probably a lot of players wouldn't very much appreciate playing 3, 4, 5 parts and then realize they've been the dupe for the entire story. So I went back to the drawing board.
Actually, I would have dug that.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I in the interim, I read a lot of people who not in this series, but on a lot of other series that didn't like, you know, getting a hint of what was going on, and then not having the ability to, you know, call them out after three parts, because, you know, they got to play all five, and so at the end they say stuff like, well, I knew this was going to happen, and I couldn't, you know, all this type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that also, by the way, explains the story a little more. I'm sorry, the name of the story a little more, because at the time it was his gambit to basically use the player, and it doesn't really make sense as the story now exists, except I kept it for my own historical reasons. So how it came together from there is I had a basic outline. I knew I was going to do five parts. I laid it out when I started for, you know, two or three sentences for each of the five parts. I had where each part would begin, where each part would end, and a few of the big events in each. And then when I got to each part, I fleshed it out with a much more extensive design document. So the way it was is I knew from the start essentially where I was going, the big picture, but then I allowed for some innovation or inspiration, I guess, as I got to the different parts. And actually there were several, I guess, major changes that resulted as a result of that. I don't know if you want to go into some of them.
Hey, do what you want.
Do what I want.
Yeah.
All right. I guess people can press fast forward. one of the things that I originally didn't have in there was the character of Malden Greer, which if people have played, I guess, the series know that the principal enemy, antagonist, if you will, is a demonic sword. That's what really motivates the entire series. But there's this other character who continually tries to interject himself in the proceedings called Malden Greer, who obviously has a history with Salarin. And as I originally envisioned the story, this character didn't exist. But I had a scene at the end of Act 2 where the protagonist's village gets destroyed, and there was a mysterious wizard, I guess, that did it. And I guess it just started, you know, I just started thinking about it, that the character would probably work as a sort of Moriarty, if you will, to Salarin's Sherlock, as a kind of a foil who was, who liked to continually harass Salarin. And so this is one of those inspirations that I kind of redrew the story from there. And it really motivated chapters 3 and 5 specifically from there, because I knew that if I wanted to have this guy essentially come in and out of the series, you know, unlike a lot of, you know, villains who get defeated time and again, and you think, well, they've been defeated the first 10 times, you know, why is the 11th time any, you know, why should we fear this guy? I wanted to actually make him win a couple battles up front, so that kind of infused part 3, where Salarin sends the PC off to do some work and is meanwhile trying to recover this helm or something to help in the battle, and come to find out Malden actually gets there first. And in chapter 5, Malden destroys the one of the war wizard defenders of the town that the PC's in. So, and all this was set to build up several victories for this guy, I guess, prior to the final his final defeat at the end. So that was a major change. I guess, to be real quick, I introduced two characters in part 3 who became major characters, either Lazarus or Arcturus, who became henchmen throughout the entire rest of the story.
And Arcturus for me.
Arcturus, okay. Well, originally you find them when you get dumped into a dungeon.
Right.
And they were originally supposed to... I introduced them there because I figured a lot of people wouldn't want to solo that dungeon otherwise. So at the beginning, I was just going to have them, you know, you get out of the dungeon and then say, okay, thanks for seeing here, bye-bye, and they run away and you never see them again. And then I'll skip a few steps, but I eventually decided to have them become actually doppelgangers in the dungeon, because I saw a good, nice, interesting doppelganger you know, creature, and I was looking for some extra twist at the end. And one thing led to another, and these guys, well, became companions for all of Chapter 3, and then I decided, well, for some point to resurrect them, you needed to pay 150, so if the character's going to drop that, they probably want the guys for the rest of the adventure. And that's how two characters that I started and didn't really care about and were supposed to be just paper, you know, cardboard cutouts became the most prominent companions in the game. And it's probably the source of my biggest regret for the series, because I was never really happy, to be honest, with either of them as companions. And I didn't need to be, as they were originally envisioned, but then they became really prominent. And if I could go back and redo it, if I, you know, was doing it from scratch, I would, I think, have better ideas for companions.
In case anybody is planning on playing this still, I don't want to give any spoilers, but I would have loved to have kept the guy from the island. I thought he was interesting.
Oh, Norrell?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he was actually one that I actually liked, and I liked the one from the fifth chapter, Bryn. Norrell was a paladin that didn't know he was a paladin.
Yeah.
And I thought was a totally different take on you know, what a paladin, what our vision of him is. And then Bryn was a ranger in Chapter 5, which was a totally different idea. You know, a ranger who stalks the plains versus, you know,
right,
the forests. So, yeah, I did. There are a lot of people that didn't like Norrell, by the way. I actually wrote both of the Chapter 4 hench people, Norrell and Vera, to be...
I liked him. I thought he was interesting.
Yeah, I wrote them to be not likable characters, to be honest.
Okay, I'm a little quirky, apparently. I'm going to make a big deal about this, because the music you picked for your module was amazing. I mean, it gave all the modules such amazing atmosphere. Do you have any personal favorites?
Yeah, I have one that stuck out for me. First off, I want to say that about 95% of the music was ripped off, copyrighted. You picked one of the few that wasn't. Your favorite was one of the few that wasn't.
Yeah, the Nighttime Slums in Series 3.
Yes.
It had such a cool beat. My boyfriend was staring at me. He's looking. He goes, "What are you doing? I thought you were playing a module." And I say, "Yeah, you should hear this music." And I was bopping my head playing.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, world, I'm admitting it. So what?
No, I play music a lot, you know, mod music a lot, too. The only music that I knew going in that I wanted to use was what I used for the Gate District and the University District in Silvery Moon,
mm-hmm.
which came from Icewind Dale, actually Icewind Dale 2, which I think is a fantastic soundtrack by a guy named Einan Zur. I hope I pronounced his name right. But when I started planning number two, I said, oh, I want these themes. It's the Targos dock theme and the Targos town theme, which I used for the two sections, which I think are just fantastic pieces of music. Everything else other than that, when I started building the chapter, I had to sit down and just spent, you know, 2-3 nights going through the vault, downloading everything that was, you know, that was on the music side of the hack packs, and just listening to track after track for hours and picking out, you know, 8 to 10 that I thought would work for, you know, the themes for the feel that I was trying to get for that module. And you'll realize when you do that, that pretty much everything is copyrighted material on the music side of the hack packs.
And I just happened to pick one that wasn't.
Right.
Lucky me. Yeah, because we are going to use it for the interview. Before we move on away from Salaron's Gambit, I wanted to make a comment that you had one of the best endings I have ever played. There was true closure and decision, and I really, really enjoyed it.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
I worked a long time on it.
Well, it was fantastic. When I closed the game after I finished part 5, I was like, wow, that was an amazing ending. I truly felt like it ended.
Oh, well, then I shouldn't do the epilogue chapter that I was thinking about. That would open it all back up again. You did the so-called good ending, I guess.
I did both. I played it twice.
Both.
Yeah.
Okay.
I did both, and I thought it was fantastic. I was like, wow, that is like a true ending. But On to the next question. Your Neverwinter Nights 2 project, the Maimed Gods series. Gods series. Gods, right? Yeah. Maimed Gods
Maimed
Saga.
Maimed Gods Saga, yep.
Would you like to share a little bit about it?
Yeah. Okay. It's based upon, the way I think about it, it's got two big pillars in the module that everything else kind of hangs on. First, it's a cleric-based module, and the second, it will heavily feature romances, which were not featured in Salarin's Gambit.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of the first one, the cleric-based, I guess way back in 06 or 05, there was a list put out for Neverwinter Nights 1 modules by Alex Hugon, goes by Hugie on the forums,
mm-hmm.
for all of the class-based modules. And I looked on there, and there were a few classes not represented. Of course, rogues and mages and were very common. But cleric was one thing that wasn't. And I was still having to work on Salarin's Gambit 5 at that point. So it just percolated in my mind for, you know, what would a cleric adventure look like? And my original thing was to focus on powers. Okay, we're going to have a lot of undead, so they can turn all sorts of stuff, and they have to heal people and so forth. But that wasn't really satisfying. You know, when I start drawing up an adventure based on that, it wasn't really satisfying because, I mean, how many undead can you really turn before it gets, you know, old hat?
Monotonous.
Yes. So I guess I started thinking about the motivations of the characters. When I played Baldur's Gate or Icewind Dale, you always have to have a cleric in the party, but they inevitably become just, you know, healing batteries or buff, you know, machines.
Right.
And I never, until this, I started thinking about, well, what motivates someone like this to go out adventuring? And so the Maimed Gods Saga is an adventure that is cleric-based because it frankly only makes sense for a cleric to do it. Maybe a paladin, but it's so wrapped up in church politics, and it's specifically the Church of Tyr, because as the story kind of came together in my mind, I narrowed it even more down to the Tyrian Church. And, of course, it's very similar to the Salarin's Gambit series in that, you know, the gods in that series were very active, and obviously in an adventure like this, they're going to be active again, in fact, more active even. It also is a kind of a low-powered weapon series, though there will be a magical weapon appear in this one like in Salarin's Gambit. But the mod, it centers on a mystery surrounding, I guess, a man named Allred Van Gaunt, who was a battle priest of Tyr in the 12th century DR.
Mm-hmm.
That won great glory, and eventually he led a settlement in a town called Navat-Renasu near the site of a great miracle he witnessed. Now, the problem is that basically from the beginning, his family has been under the influence of a curse. They've asked for help from the Tyrian Church. For some reason, no help has ever gone until you, the PC, are answering the call of the final one of this line. Everybody else has been taken by this curse except for the final one of their line, a woman named Jellica Van Gaunt. And the bulk of the module revolves around solving this mystery. And I'm not giving away any details that I haven't already in my blog, but it's essentially revealed that the family in the town is caught in the web of one of the evil deities. So you're getting involved in a conflict of the gods. And for 200 years, this deity has been laying this plan that only now is beginning to come to fruition. And the PC, in trying to figure out why Tyr has not confronted this before now, you know, for his people calling out for him, you begin to realize that, in fact, he has, in the way of the gods, that, in fact, you're his vessel of solving the problem. And then the romances. I finally, you know, I'm not a big one for romances in modules, but there was a poll on the vault where like an overwhelming majority of people are. And so I finally gave into the results, but I said if I'm going to do this, it's got to be done right. In other words, what I say disparagingly on my blog, say you like my hair 6 times and I'm yours. I mean, you can slap me around, insult me constantly, but as long as my hair is good, we're set to go. And I hate that paradigm.
Oh, I do too.
And I'm dead set against doing it. So I've tried, and it's the biggest source of struggle in making this module, how to make it realistic so that there are, you don't have to always look at your conversation with these people and say, well, which is the right one? You know, I don't want to, you know, if I pick the wrong one, then it ends. But if I pick the right one, it good, we're good to go. So hopefully I'm going to get around that. Each of the companions, there will be only one. It will be a ranger, single ranger, who will be crucial in getting the companion to this far out of the way town, getting the player to this far out of the way town, and then conducting investigations in the wild around this town. So they're really central to the story. And I'm estimating now that the companions will have, between their dialogue file, their interjects, their comments on the various items, people, events, that each one will have between 35,000 and 40,000 words just to them. And many interjections. And then one of the things that I'm trying to do is orient the player to think of this in the day-night cycle, where you conduct your investigation during the day or at night if it makes sense to, then you come back to your home base and sleep at night. And one of the things I'm really focusing on is when you come back to sleep at night, you can start a fire, I guess, in your home base, sit down in the chair, and you have discussions where there's a lot of character interaction.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, and that's where a ton of the dialogue is. And I also kind of am trying to interject what I call flirt points, which and more than different kinds of flirting. So hopefully it will, progress naturally, because the adventure, of course, it's going to be probably about 12 to 15 hours in real time, but the time in the game is several weeks, a couple weeks, maybe 3 weeks. And how do you go from not knowing this person to being in love, in 3 weeks? And one of the mechanisms, and that's why you're so far out of the way with these overwhelming forces against you, and there's these villagers have no ability to defend themselves from the kind of enemies that are there. And you've got essentially two heroes, for want of a better term, that are capable of acting to stop this plot. And so you're thrown together with only each other to depend on to get you out of it. And so I hope that it will be much better than anything in any official product to date. But I got to be honest, it's the one thing I'm struggling with probably more than anything else, is how to make it right.
Just don't watch the Lifetime channel. I actually said that in the roundtable that we did, because I was conflicted about doing a romance also, because so many of them are just too far-fetched, or I can't even tell they exist.
Yeah.
And like the OC, for example, all of a sudden I'm on a wall with Casimir, and he's like, oh, and I'm like, what the heck? Where did this come from?
Yeah,
I didn't even know it was happening.
Yeah, and I got to be honest, I loved Mask of the Betrayer. But
I did too.
But yeah, that's another example of one that's not,
yeah,
not all that good.
I think the influence levels were way too easy.
Yeah, and I wish it was that easy in real life. You know, you say, I really like your mom, and then in yellow letters about +6 influence, oh, goody, I love you. You know? You can say anything you want. I mean, you can imagine yourself slapping her around in the interim. That's fine. But you like her mom, so it's all good to go. And not only is it all good to go, she'll go to the very depths of hell for you, you know?
As long as you have a high enough influence level, it doesn't matter.
Exactly. And what's more, it tells you so clearly when it is, you know?
Yes, it
like,
does.
Give me a compliment and +6. Yes.
I don't know if this was a quirk in the game, if it was a mistake, but I played through Mask of the Betrayer 3 times, 4 times. Don't laugh at me. The guys make fun of me all the time because I play games over and over again until I get different endings. And I played 2 females and 2 males, different races, classes, everything else. And Gan of Dreams both ended up with my character, my female character at the end. And one time he traveled with her, and the other time, he expressed his undying devotion and everything else, and then leaves her at the end. And I was like, wait a minute.
You got different endings?
Yeah.
Oh, well,
I got one where he traveled with her and stayed with her, and the other one, he walks off into, goes back to Rashomon and travels with the company and becomes an actor and all this other stuff. I was like, now wait a minute, this time he expressed all this devotion to me and he leaves?
Well, be honest, did you insult his hag mother at one point? That would cause me to leave at the end, too. But only after we went to tear down the wall of the faithless.
Well, I found it kind of quirky, so.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and do that with you, and then I'll leave.
Oh, my. Okay. Okay, you've joined Ossian Studios, which, wow, that's really cool. How does it feel to be working with such a talented team?
Well, it's pretty amazing. It's one of the best experiences of my modding life. I'm constantly amazed by really how talented people are. Regular readers of my blog, for example, will know that I constantly give shout-outs to the level designers,
mm-hmm.
who are Raphael Fatrioli and Alex Wagner. Both are very prominent members of the community. And, I mean, the first time I ever kicked up the game during one of my playthroughs and walked through the final maps of Westgate, it literally took my breath away. I found myself wandering around. I want to look in that alleyway over there to see just the way they've put things together. It's absolutely, I think people who play it will the first playthrough of Westgate will just be a jaw-dropping experience. I mean, I really think that they're, I know you've interviewed Zach Holbrook recently, who's also joined.
Yeah.
And I think he's one of the best area designers I've ever seen. And I've talked to him, I've told him that by email on several occasions. And I think these guys are just as good. But the other thing, it's just the level of writing, the level of professionalism on everybody. I don't want to just say the area designers. I mean, the writers, this may sound self-serving because I am a writer, but I also mean the other writers. I'm just amazed by how we went through a module, an adventure of something like, I heard the number of words. It's over 200,000, I think, that
wow.
we put together in 6 months. And it's just, you know, I remember, of course, I know what I wrote, but then I'm going through and looking at what other people write, and I was just pretty amazed. So, and then, of course, it's just cool to be able to email people of that talent level for help, and as I said, it's been a great experience.
I did see that Mysteries of Westgate got delayed. I saw that today.
Yes, I can't say anything about that.
Oh, that's okay. Well, it said that they're waiting for patch 113. And it had something to do with a security code of some sort. But I did read it on Rob's blog today. Rob McGinnis.
Yeah. Yeah, it's unfortunate.
Well, we're still going to download it, so it's okay. I mean,
you will be.
Neverwinter Nights 2 got delayed quite a bit, and I still bought it.
Yep, it's going to be a great adventure.
Oh, trust me, I'll be like in the line for downloading.
And you'll get to play it probably about four or five times to see all the different things.
Oh, I will.
Yeah, good.
When creating a module, what is your most challenging aspects, and which ones do you find most enjoyable?
All right, challenging is probably, it's honestly, it's module dependent. I try to do something new. With every module. So normally it's whatever I haven't done before. For the main God saga, for example, I've already mentioned that romances are giving me a hard time. But also journals, in this case, because it's a mystery, and I guess I'm trying to give away too much, trying to keep from giving away too much when, you know, you look at a painting which has a detail that might be relevant. You know, if you hear the journal, you know, cha-ching, then you say, oh, wait, I got to pay attention to that. And I really don't know which way I'm going to go in terms of should I allow the player to think themselves through it or kind of give it all away.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that I'm doing new for this is that I'm actually going to write the music myself, so I don't have to worry about...
Wow.
Yeah, well, I got to figure out how to do that. Yeah, I don't have to figure out how to actually write the music. I've done that enough. But the technical aspect, creating an orchestra from nothing, that's the part that I'm really don't know how I'm going to do. I've never done it on the computer before, and I just mm-hmm. have to figure that out and get the right software and make it sound good. As far as what's most enjoyable, everything but scripting, and especially the cutscenes. I hate cutscenes.
Yeah.
I can do them, but I hate them. The best moment of every module is when I play it for the first time. Because I tend to be one of those people. I don't build something and then test it, and build something and then test it. I tend to just throw everything together as much as possible, and then kick it up and see what happens. And normally there's several catastrophic failures the first time, but you know, walking through for the first time your creation and seeing it all come to life, even if it is very imperfect the first time, is always kind of a thrill.
I don't know if you know, but I'm doing the writing for The Misery Stone. And I'm really, really good at dialogue, going back and forth between characters and stuff. Mm-hmm. And story writing is my issue, the whole little narrated stuff in between. I get a little carried away and I'm like, okay, need to scale it down. But Jason has done some amazing things with the cameras. My first scene that I did, the cameras and the interaction, I was like, wow, that really came all together, you know? But I love doing dialogue. I swear I have some schizophrenia in me, because then I get all these characters in my head, and I swear they're having a complete conversation in my head, and I'll actually sit there and giggle.
Well, yeah, that's the start, right?
Oh, it's fun. I really yeah. love doing dialogue, and I am doing a romance. But it is going to be difficult. It is going to be quirky. And there are going to be, I don't want to give away too much also, but there are going to be outcomes that people are going to be like, oh, my God, I can't believe you did that. And, you know, and I don't want it to be all fairy tale and happily ever after. And, you know, there are going to be those chances, but there's also going to be some other ones that the player is probably going to think, I can't believe he did that to me, you know.
Well, that takes place in Ravenloft, right?
Right.
Well, there are no fairy tales in Ravenloft, right?
Exactly. No.
You'd say this is the Ravenloft romance.
Right. It's pretty...
Where they all end up undead.
Oh, I want to know how the transition from Neverwinter Nights 1 to Neverwinter Nights 2 was for you.
Honestly, pretty easy. A lot of people seem to experience crashes or lost work or things like that, and I haven't really... had any issues about that. I need to find some wood, I guess, to knock on right now, but it's not been all that difficult. I guess I've come up with some issues in some of the scripting I've done, where some of the functions from Neverwinter Nights and 2 have some small differences. I can't think of any right now off the top of my head, but I do remember spending way too much time on some of my work in Main God Saga in Act 1, where the issue was, it's just something didn't work quite the same as in Neverwinter Nights 1, and that's always frustrating. But really, the tool set in almost every respect is superior once you pay the time to actually learn it.
Mm-hmm. I've made it to learning how to adding dialogue in the script editor. That's how far I've gotten. I figure, hey, it's a baby step.
Well, did you ever do anything in Neverwinter Nights 1?
No. I played hundreds and hundreds of modules. So is there anything else you'd like to add tonight?
No, not really.
Okay.
I would like to thank you for the work that you do. And thank you for taking the time to talk with me.
Oh, my pleasure. I love doing this. I really do.
Yeah, it's. I've been aware of your group for a while, but I guess I'm like a lot of people that, you know, I'm too busy doing my own thing to really, always keep up with what other people are doing. So you came on my map seriously, I guess, when you did the Ossian interview
mm-hmm.
a few weeks ago. And it's just kind of cool because I know there's a lot of groups and, you know, I'm pretty well known within my group. But there's just a lot of different stuff going on in this community, and it's a very vibrant and cool community to be part of.
Well, when you're sitting down and you're scripting or something, you know, you go over to the Neverwinter Nights podcast, you put your headset on, and you start listening, and there you go.
I have been doing that recently. you know, I've got, what are you on, like 47 or 48 or something like that now?
Yeah, 48, I believe, is coming out with Adam Miller.
Okay.
It should be out tonight.
Okay, well, I got a lot of backlog then to get through.
I listened to
the Aussie and I listened to Zach.
Ah.
So I got, what, 46 more?
Yeah, I interviewed Zach when he released Harp and Chrysanthemums, and he was also in one of the tool set roundtables.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Oh, I'll have to find that. You know what the coolest thing of the Zach interview was?
Hmm.
For the first time. Now, I've talked with this guy by email for months, if not a year or more now. And for the first time, I heard his voice. That was amazing.
Voice behind the text, huh?
Yes.
He was a pleasure to talk to. He really is. He's a very nice guy. And I enjoy doing the interview. I enjoy doing all my interviews. I really, really like doing this. When they asked me on board back, they interviewed me in episode 13, which is kind of funny because, you know, I really haven't done anything. But they interviewed me because I orchestrated a huge chat event with Obsidian Entertainment. I got like 9 or 10 developers in a huge text chat on MIRC. I had my 1 year anniversary last show.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I noticed that on one of your recent ones.
Yeah. It was my 1 year anniversary. I was like, I can't believe I've been doing this for a year. It's too fun to be work, you know? Granted, I have to come up with all these questions and everything else, and I truly do my homework. I play the modules. And a lot of times I've already played them. But I truly do my homework, and I Google them, and I see, oh, well, you know what, they're doing something else over here, too. And so needless to say, I was going to ask you, and I forgot to ask you this, you're a history buff, correct?
Yes.
Is there anything particular that you really enjoy, any particular stories about history that you're, like, really into?
Well, I'm working on a master's in history, and the focus of that is medieval England.
Ah.
A lot of good stuff going on there. Yeah. I like a lot of history, but that's pretty much what I focus on. And if you, what my thesis is on is the War of the Roses.
Ah, fabulous.
Actually, the ending episode of the War of the Roses.
Yeah, okay. I enjoyed your little FYI on your blog. That was pretty interesting because I told you on your blog that I was watching The Tudors.
Yep.
The show, and I don't know how historically accurate it is, and I don't know that I want to know because I'm really enjoying the show. So.
I've actually since gone to Amazon and looked to see, and so I could get the DVDs.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm tempted. I've read some of the comments on it, and you know, I don't get all wrapped up, I guess, in historical accuracy, so long as it gets really kind of the feel of the story right. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, story, you know, like any of my mods, I'm not going to get wrapped up in Realms lore either if it conflicts with the story I want to tell. And if they're telling a story, then the story is paramount. As long as, you know, as I say, for in that case and in the case of the other Boleyn girl, which is what I talked about recently, if you're getting the characterization or the feel of Henry and Anne Boleyn and all the rest of them correct, then I can forgive minor historical inaccuracies.
If anybody wants to watch it, male or female, it has everything for everybody. It's ruthless. It is brutal. It is endearing, romantic, sexy. I mean, it has everything you could ask for in a show. Seriously.
All right, I'll get it. I have read that on their next series coming up, they're going to...
Start Sunday night, actually.
Yeah, they're going to get rid of Anne at the end of the season.
Yes.
They're going to finally chop her head off. I wonder how they're going to continue. I guess they have to go get Jane Seymour.
I don't. she'll
only get one season.
It is a really good show, though. I will have to say, I didn't know a lot about him and that era. I knew some of it because of going through school, you know, European history, etc. But when I started watching the show and I was like, wow, you know, this is just amazing. And it has every element you can ask for without, and it seems like a cinematic movie rather than a series. I mean, it's like you're just watching this continuing, well-budgeted movie through the entire thing. So.
Yeah, but that was an interesting time. And it's not a coincidence that they've literally been making movies about it for, well, probably since they started making movies. But when you go back all the way to the, you know, Man for All Seasons and, and Anne of a Thousand Days, which even though they're 40, 45-year-old movies, they're still very much watchable.
Yes.
And up through, you know, a little bit later on, you've got the two Elizabeth movies now and the Balloon Girl and the series and so forth. Well, I'm actually happy. You made a couple comments on that particular post because I've been in between my Maimed God stuff on my blog. I've actually been occasionally commenting on historical topics that are of interest to me. And those are normally the ones where the crickets chirp on the comments section. That's why I've started saying, warning, boring history alert coming up, because I think, you know, it's what only interests me, I guess, and you.
I noticed as I got older, after school and stuff, I actually had more interest in history than I did going through, you know, basic public school, and, well, I was in private school also, and because it was all about remembering dates and remembering events and places, and it just didn't seem to have any true flavor to it. But if you buy historically accurate novels or anything, they're truly interesting.
Yeah, history is, I don't know if I said it, but I often say it, I don't get very interested into modern history. That's why I go back a ways. And history to me is very similar to, role-playing games or fantasy, in that they're totally different worlds if you go back far enough. I mean, it's another story, although it's one that actually happened.
Right.
And I can read a historical book, and it's like I'm reading a, well, I shouldn't say that, but it activates the same centers of my brain, I guess, that I would in a fantasy novel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Henry, for example, going back to him, or Elizabeth, or any one of these people, is every bit as fantastic a character as any, you know, as any fictional character you're going to come up with. I mean, as you say, there's every emotion in the book with Henry.
It is fantastic. I mean, he goes from everything from this ruthless deviant to this, you know, love-struck puppy, and I mean, it is an amazing show. I was really surprised. I didn't think I'd be surprised that I liked it, because I really like shows and movies like that go back into the old history, the Dark Ages, and all that stuff. And but I was really amazed at the quality of the show. And you know, the actors are also pretty high caliber. They really have some good actors in the show. So
yeah, I'm probably going to have to take a look. I've seen I've seen some pictures, seen some stills. I know the costuming is great, and it looks like it's pretty high quality.
Jay's gonna laugh at me. He's gonna tell me I'm like herding cats again. This has nothing to do with Neverwinter Nights 2, but hey, it's interesting. Okay, Russ, I would like to thank you very much for coming tonight. I really enjoyed the interview. You were very informative, and yes, we did have a little bit of cat herding, but that's all right. It was interesting.
Yeah, occasionally you can do something different from Neverwinter Nights, right?
Hey, absolutely. You know, it's really easy to go off topic and talk about other things. You know, they're like trigger points.
Exactly.
I hope you enjoyed your experience and maybe not so nervous now.
Yeah, it wasn't so bad.
All right. You have a great night, and thank you for coming.
And thank you for having me.
And we're back. Hey, we had a new person post in our comments this past episode, someone I haven't seen before. C.Lucas. C.LEUCAS. So shout out to the new commenter.
Oh, yeah, I did see that. Matter of fact, I think I approved that one. Because, I mean, that's another thing I'd like to mention. I did write this in the comments. If you are a new commenter, and typing a comment for the first time, your post will land in the moderation section for us to approve. Once we approve it, it shouldn't be a problem after that. It's a first-time-only thing. And if you don't see your post right away, just give us a little bit of time. We'll get it out there.
The moderation bucket.
A moderation bucket. Then there's the other bucket that we just hit delete.
Michelle will dive into the well and get it for you.
It's your turn to go in the well, Trey.
I usually go out there and check. I haven't seen any lately.
Yeah, I check it.
You always catch them before we do.
I usually feel bad.
I just see the Viagra ones.
Oh gosh, we get some horrible spam mail.
Spam comments, you mean?
Yes, our spam comments are horrible.
I'm just glad we have this thing that catches them.
Oh, definitely. But I do. I go, especially when the show's just been released and the weekend out, and I feel bad, you know, somebody posts for the first time and they're like, well, okay, my comment's not there. So I check often.
Hey, I know something we haven't mentioned in a while.
What's that?
Help us line our coffers.
Ah.
If you so feel inclined, we do have a PayPal button on the front page.
Yes, we do.
Any help would be great.
Trey needs new shoes.
Plus, we're sending Michelle somewhere, and we need some money for her. Which we can't tell you about yet.
They're sending me far, far away.
Now, that's a teaser.
Yes, that's a teaser.
Maybe next episode we can tell you about it. So who do we have for next time, Michelle?
Up next, in episode 54, we have Robert Cliff Crawford, a.k.a. FFBJ.
Cool. I think Dave cornered him and is going to talk about some of his worlds and modules that he's written, right?
Yes. I think Dave interviewed him just the other night.
So until next time, get in game.
And level up.
You can always reach us via our website at neverwinternightspodcast.com or by email at show@neverwinternightspodcast.com. You can also leave an audio comment or listener hello by calling us on Skype. Just call NWN Podcast, all one word. The opinions and viewpoints expressed on the Neverwinter Nights podcast are not necessarily those of its sponsors or those of Obsidian, BioWare, Atari, their partners, or employees. The Neverwinter Nights podcast is a production of These Old Geeks, who is solely responsible for its content.
For now, I say we crack some of those kegs and drown the flagon in wine.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast is copyright 2008.
Kick it off podcast style.
Meow, meow, meow.
Stop stepping on the cat. I'm gonna get.
Hey,
you
we got a, and we're back. And we're back.
This is horrible. You sound strange, baby.